they shut down these big major players. But it's like fighting with Hydra, right? You cut off one head, two heads comes up.
Welcome to Off the Chart, a Business of Medicine podcast featuring lively and informative conversations with healthcare experts, opinion leaders, and practicing physicians about the challenges facing doctors and medical practices. I'm your host, Keith Reynolds, and this week we feature a conversation between Medical Economics Managing Editor Todd Tryock and Farhad Dikbiak, Chief Research and Intelligence Officer at Black Kite. They're talking about cybersecurity and the evolving structure and threat of ransomware gangs.
I'm here with Farhad Dikbiak, Chief Research and Intelligence Officer at the cybersecurity firm Black Kite, to discuss their latest report on ransomware. So according to the report, attacks in healthcare were up 32% from 2023 to 2024. Why did that surge happen?
That surge happened because of the shifts and dynamics of the ransomware cybercrime ecosystem. We know that there were these major ransomware groups in 2023, like Lockbit or Afi, and they are working with affiliates, and they are advising their affiliates not to target healthcare institutions or nonprofit organizations. If their affiliate didn't listen to them and attack these institutions, they published apologies and some sort of a twisted PR move or marketing move and providing free decryptors to those companies. But after the law enforcement agency's attack in January, February, especially Operation Kronos was very successful, those operations took down these major ransomware groups. And now the affiliates have more power in that ransomware ecosystem. And in the past, it was more like a ransomware as a service provider driven ecosystem, but it is more like an affiliate driven ecosystem now. And after all these law enforcement agencies attacks and everything, these affiliates, they got pissed. They said that everything, everywhere is targeted. We don't care if it's a healthcare institution or anything. And they start to see this healthcare institution as a low-hanging fruit. There is no that twisted code of conduct anymore, and they can attack and get money. And the attack to change healthcare was kind of like a turning point. When that happened, the group behind the attack, called Black Cat, also known as Afi, they didn't pay the commission to their affiliate, and they exit the cybercrime ecosystem. And the now affiliates, they don't want to be in that position again. And there are different ransomware groups. They changed the business model in that ransomware cybercrime ecosystem, saying that, hey, now you get the money first and I will get my commission later. So they changed the business model, and they start to offer a very high percentage commission to affiliates, like 90%, up to 90% commissions. Now affiliates have more power. They have more decision to, you know, to select who to target. And now they are targeting anywhere because they don't care. They just want their money.
How do these affiliates work? I mean, they sound like contracted workers, like a normal company would use. What are they, and how are they organized?
Well, these are usually like in countries that they want money very quickly. They look up to, you know, previous these, you know, ransomware players and how much money they earned, and they are looking up to them. They are, of course, young kids, but we are not talking about middle-aged, so middle school kids or high school kids. We are talking about the kids in the age of 19, 20s, the young adults, actually. And now these ransomware groups, they have a service called Ransomware as a Service. In their blog post or in the hacker forums, they published, you know, this affiliate program saying that, hey, if you join us, I will provide you this ransomware as a weapon that you can target, you know, these companies. And when you have a successful attack, I will negotiate the ransom, and then I will pay you a commission. So that's like a MSSP or MSP partner for, you know, for certain cybersecurity vendors. So it's like a partner kind of a business relationship between the affiliates and the RAS providers.
Like, how many of these affiliates would a ransomware gang employ? Does anybody know?
We know that Lockbit, they work with, sorry, hundreds of affiliates. I think the real number is about 140. But currently there are 60 ransomware groups. They are active, that they publish at least one victim. Even if you think that they work on average 10 affiliates, that will become 600 affiliates. I'm sure that the real number is much more than that.
Say, Keith, this is all well and good, but what if someone is looking for more clinical information?
Oh, then they want to check out our sister site, patientcareonline.com, the leading clinical resource for primary care physicians. Again, that's patientcareonline.com.
So, with this change in the kind of culture of ransomware, it seemed like most of the attacks in the past were targeted at these large corporate entities, but the report notes that like smaller medical practices are now at risk. Talk a little bit about that. Like, how much risk is there to these smaller players now that so much has changed?
When we look into all these ransomware victims in healthcare industry, we realize that 22% of them are the large hospitals, but 25% are the offices of physicians, these, you know, small practices. And the reason behind it that these affiliates, they are okay with getting out with, you know, small ransoms, maybe like $50,000, $100,000, and they can get that much money from these offices. Because imagine that you are a single doctor, you have, you know, some employees within your office, and you got hit by ransomware. You cannot schedule appointments, you cannot prescribe any medicines. How long you can stand with that? And you don't know this, you know, cybersecurity world much. You are always in the medicine. It's not a large you know, corporate behind you. And the only thing that you know that you need to pay the ransom as soon as possible to get your practice back and run your office. So these affiliates, they know this pressure on these offices of doctors, and they you know, target them a lot. Of course, they target the big healthcare institutions as well. But big healthcare institutions, now they know that they shouldn't pay. They know that there are rules like HIPAA regulations and other things behind the scenes. And in fact, I think it was today, UK, they are proposing to ban schools and hospitals to pay ransoms. So the government regulate these, you know, big healthcare institutions. And these ransomware groups, they now use several tools to understand the ecosystem that they target. And they know that if the hospitals don't pay the ransom, they don't target the hospitals, but they target these small clinics.
I know there's been some talk of that in the United States, of just banning the payment of ransoms to these criminal organizations. In your opinion, does that help, or does it not matter? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's quite speculative, to be honest. Of course, you know, we shouldn't fund these organizations, because when you fund them, when you pay the ransom, then they have more infrastructure to, you know, attack more of the critical infrastructure of the countries. But on the other hand, there's a pressure that I can understand on the victims that they cannot operate when nothing works, right? So of course they shouldn't pay, but banning the payment put extra pressure on the victims, right? They don't know what to do. So if you need to put an alternative, okay, don't pay, I will help you by providing some, you know, some sort of an insurance, some sort of a you know, help that something happened to you, I will help you. Without some sort of assurance like that, the only option for those victims, they are under pressure and losing money every day, that the one option is just paying the ransom. And we should understand that psychology before putting policies like that.
One thing that stood out in the report to me was the change in how their demands are presented. In the past, there was more time to negotiate. Now it seems like there's a lot more pay now or else.
Well, the reason behind it that, in the past we had these major ransomware players. They have good infrastructure, they have resources, they have these negotiation panels, they have call centers and everything. But most of the top 10 players, ransomware players today, they didn't exist last year. So these are all new players. They don't have enough resources to build up these negotiation panels and everything. That's one thing. The other thing is that, especially after Change Healthcare incident, they don't want to lose time. They just want to get their money. Another, statistic that we have, which is not in this report but in another report, that we measure the time difference between two consecutive ransomware attacks to the same victim. A year ago, the time difference was 6 months apart, 1 year apart, 8 months apart, and so on. But now it is 5 days apart, 7 days apart. The reason behind it is that an affiliate, they deploy a ransomware from one ransomware group. If they don't get their commission very quickly, they deploy another ransomware from another ransomware group. So the patience of affiliates to get paid is getting shorter and shorter. That's why there's no time to negotiate the money. They just want to get the money as soon as possible.
Oh, you say you're a practice leader or administrator? We've got just the thing. Our sister site, physicianspractice.com, your one-stop shop for all the expert tips and tricks that will get your practice really humming. Again, that's physicianspractice.com.
Why can't law enforcement stop these groups? If they're so organized, they're so big, it seems like they'd be easy to find. Why can't they be stopped?
That requires a very good international collaboration. Actually, we had that during the Operation Kronos in January, February 2024. All these, law enforcement agencies from UK, from US, from Germany, they collaborated in a very good way, and they shut down major players' dark web blogs. They turned some of the affiliates into their site, and they got too much internal information. And after all this effort, they shut down these big major players. But it's like fighting with Hydra, right? You cut off one head, two heads comes up. So now there are new players. It's an ongoing battle. It's not like a one hit and you are done with it. That's the difficult part.
Are most of these groups in Eastern Europe, or where are they located?
Culturally, they are located in Eastern Europe or Russia, some in China. They are not politically motivated, but they were raised in a culture that they hate the Western culture. But when it comes to money, they don't care. They attack everybody. Of course, there are no countries for them. They don't want to get attention of certain governments. But in the last year, we start to see affiliates in Western countries. In fact, the biggest attack in the entertainment industry was MGM Resort attack. And the affiliate behind that attack is in one member in the US, if I remember correct, the other ones in UK. And the speculations in the hacker community is that this Alfie Black Cat ransomware group, they actually wanted to get rid of these Western affiliates. And they did this exit scam because of those, breaking ties with those affiliates. They don't want to work with Western affiliates. But there is this trend that we start to see that even in the Western countries, these young minds, they want to get money very quickly. They start to be involved in these cybercrime activities. But they are mostly in East Europe or Russia or China.
Now, how does a cyber criminal in, say, Russia find a small medical practice in the Midwest, in Iowa of the United States? Like, how do they find them to even know to attack their server?
So we see that the number one attack vector is exploiting vulnerabilities in certain softwares and products, right? You can have a scan for vulnerable products globally. After you have that vulnerable product list, you know that which companies are using it. There are a few ransomware groups, they do a spray attack. They attack everybody here, and these, companies, these small clinics might be one of them. The others, they use some sort of sales intelligence tools or marketing intelligence tools to get more information about those targets. And when they realize that it's a small clinic, they know that they can put more pressure because of certain things, and they select based on those criteria that they have.
Do you expect healthcare to continue to be a prime target for cyber criminals?
I believe so, because again, that twisted code of conduct is not there anymore. And HIPAA, they published a report, I think yesterday, the biggest healthcare data breach in 2024. They put 13 incidents, six of them were ransomware. So we start to see more and more ransomware. And if you look into the reported ransomware incidents, they are also increasing 110% more than last year. So this trend will go up. Of course, the number one industry is still manufacturing, then it is technical and professional services, number two, and healthcare is number three. But healthcare is only 8% now. I believe it will exceed the 10% in 2025.
So, what can a small medical practice do to protect itself against these very sophisticated cyber attacks?
It is important to be proactive in these cases. They need to work with a cybersecurity company, of course, or get some sort of a service, and to understand the risk going on there. If their clinic is shut down for 1 week or 1 month, what will be the cost? And considering that cost, they need to invest someone on the cybersecurity side, and they need to get, of course, cyber insurance that might cover the ransomware problems. And they need, if that happens, they need to get in contact with FBI and other law enforcement agencies right away in that second. Because I know that the FBI, they put so much effort on preventing these things and helping victims. They shouldn't think that this should be a hush-hush thing. They shouldn't, inform anybody, because these ransomware groups put their name on these ransomware groups' dark web blog posts. Anyway, their name will be there, and everybody will know that. So they shouldn't think like, hey, if I pay, nobody will know and I will get my practice back. That shouldn't be the case. And they should, of course, have backups of all the systems they have if they don't want to face these situations.
Is phishing still the main way that they're getting in, or has that changed?
Phishing is, based on our analysis, number two. It's still very dominant. Exploiting vulnerabilities is number one. Phishing is number two, but it is very difficult to decouple them. These groups, they use them together mostly. For small clinics, probably phishing is the number one. For large healthcare institutions, exploiting vulnerabilities is number one attack vector.
Okay, so a small practice should make sure its employees are trained on being able to
Exactly.
recognize some of the common phishing methods.
Yep, definitely.
Okay. Anything else that you would like to mention about the report that we haven't talked about?
I think we cover most of the things, but I just want to emphasize that, healthcare risk, ransomware risk is increasing, and we will see more. So we need to stop that before it happens. We need to make sure that we stay vigilant. We understand the ransomware risk, and we do things before it happens.
Very good. Thanks for joining me today. This was very insightful.
It's very, I'm very pleased to meet you. Thank you.
Again, that was Medical Economics Managing Editor Todd Tryock and Ferhat Digbiak, Chief Research and Intelligence Officer at the cybersecurity firm Black Kite. My name is Keith Reynolds, and on behalf of the whole Medical Economics and Physicians Practice teams, I'd like to thank you for listening and ask that you please subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Also, if you'd like the best stories Medical Economics and Physicians Practice published delivered straight to your email 6 days a week, subscribe to our newsletter at medicaleconomics.com and physicianspractice.com. Oh, and one more thing. Be sure to check out Medical Economics Pulse, a quick-hitting news podcast that offers concise updates on the most important developments affecting your practice, your bottom line, and the broader healthcare landscape, delivered by the editorial team at Medical Economics. Off the Chart, a Business of Medicine podcast, is executive produced by Chris Mazzolini and produced by Keith Reynolds and Austin Luttrell. Medical Economics, Physicians Practice, and Patient Care Online are all members of the MJH Life Sciences family. Thank you.